Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quick sound check. Cell Sharks. RGC. Didsbury Tok H Rugby Club. Perfect. Hello and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB. On one of the most monumental weeks in rugby history, not only are the fixtures out, not only are the boys all back in pre-season, but the Northern Hemisphere can hold its head up high after this weekend's monumental events in New Zealand. But I won't be talking about this alone, because to my side is a man who's just driven 5 hours from the land of no lions, Scotland. It's Phil.
Hello, Jonathan.
And down the line, in the shipping container, presumably talking about, is it deliberate or is it not deliberate offside? It's Tim. Hello, Timothy.
Yes, I was very much in Romain Poit's ear from the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container.
Do you think you had much influence on his decision, Tim, from the shipping container?
He had a knife to his throat.
Well, we had a chat, did Romain and myself, and we both agreed that his original decision was correct, and then he went rogue and did his own thing. But before we get into any rugby, I think we should point out, bearing in mind that we've been doing this for 3 years and we never stop and never miss anything, this was the biggest rugby event since we've been doing the podcast.
Yeah.
And where were you for the rugby, JB?
I was in the rather glorious Windermere Rugby Club, which ranks among one of the most beautiful rugby clubs I have ever been to. And not only was it a beautiful setting, it had a real kind of, like, village feel to it. At one point, two coppers came in to watch the game.
Two coppers.
I love it. Did they have a beer?
They didn't, because, do you know, it's actually illegal to serve a policeman in uniform, or policewoman for that matter, an alcoholic beverage if they're in uniform.
Wow.
But that sounds fantastic.
It was really good. And also met a listener of the show. So hello to Simon, yeah.
This was very hastily arranged. This wasn't planned, because what did you arrange for the weekend of the biggest rugby event since we've been doing the podcast?
What did I arrange? I mean, as in, like, where should I have been? I mean, I should have been here. No, I'll tell you what happened. I should have been here, right? But my wife has a very cunning way of dealing with me, which is to lie. It's a lie through her teeth about where we are going, what we should be doing. For her sister's 30th, she told me, oh, we'll just nip up for the day. And then it was, oh, we're there for a night. And then it's there for two nights. And then I'm thinking, well, which nights are these? Because it can't be Friday night, surely, because Lions is in the morning, which you well know of. And Sunday night, I mean, I would fly back if I was in Rio de Janeiro to get back on Sunday nights, because that's what we do on Sunday nights. So, yeah, as in the lakes. Is that the answer you wanted?
No, I like it. It's just quite funny how committed we are. We are genuinely committed, and we have made sacrifices so many times, and we've found ways to do the podcast, and we all found ourselves in slightly compromising positions on the event of the biggest match
I know.
Ever.
I know.
We did.
Well, I mean, Phil's just had a 5.5 hour drive to get here.
Worth it.
Exactly. That's the sort of commitment we're talking about.
Definitely worth it. It's a hell of a drive.
So, I know, why don't we just dive straight into the game? Give me your initial reactions, Tim. In fact, where did you watch the game? Because I've not even asked.
Well, no, I was at my in-laws for the weekend.
Ah, nice.
In Lambourne, the Valley of the Racehorse. So, yeah, I had the sound of horses being trotting down the road outside as I...
And then shocked when they fell over awkwardly.
Oh, man alive, what a spectacle. I mean, it was the feelings before the game, I could not be more hyped up and more excited. And Sky Sports, oh, my God, they hype this event up like nobody's business, these incredible montages of this epic music. And that compared to the feeling immediately after full time, when it was a kind of hollow, empty...
What?
Like nothing, feeling of nothing.
I'm not sure if it's a feeling of nothing. It was hard to kind of describe. The whistle went, and it's kind of like, well, that's that then.
Yeah, I was actually quoted, which I take back, but I said at the time, I would have preferred New Zealand to win, because at least we would have had closure on the situation. It felt so hollow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a loss would have been sickening.
Yeah, I definitely take that back. But that was my initial reaction was, that's it. Like, as in, there is no more, and it's just undecided. But it's, I mean, just left empty.
But that could have been like anything, because it was such a big match. Even if they'd won after that final whistle, it'd have been like, do you know, like after the World Cup final, it's like, well, that's that then. There'll be no more of this. Like you feel after every Super Bowl.
When you've got 8 months,
yeah,
to the next one.
Oh yeah, so true.
So
you are right, and it's such a big gap now, comparatively. Mm. I mean, we've had this kind of orgy of rugby from, well,
you just have
the start of last season. This has been such an incredible season, both the Avicii, the Autumn Internationals, the Champions Cup, Six Nations, and then going into a Lions tour. We just had September last year, wall to wall rugby, and now we've got kind of 6 weeks where there's very little.
Yeah. Well, we'll think of something to do. But in the meantime, just give me your initial reaction, Tim, to how the Lions played, how you saw this game panning out.
Well, I saw the game panning out thinking New Zealand won't make the same errors they made in the second test. Bowden Barrett can't have another day that bad with the boot. And all being well, the pressure would tell from New Zealand. And if you took away the moments where points were scored and you just said to someone, sit down and watch that, I've removed the moments where tries and penalties were scored, guess what the score is, I would have guessed New Zealand hammered the Lions.
Well,
they butchered, they completely butchered chances galore.
Yeah,
three or four.
Is it finally time to put to bed this notion that New Zealand are clinical, skills, blah, 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 yada, 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 because they bottled it. I mean, from what I can tell, they should have won that game by 12 and 20 points.
They should have won that by two clear scores.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. I mean, whether they just blinked, whether they found the occasion too big for them, whether they just can't handle it. It wasn't impressive.
There were elements that were impressive, but it was the finish, and it was that clinical edge that we laud the All Blacks for. New Zealand for, and it was missing.
Now, I don't wish to make it all about me, but at the start of this tour, I mean, I think after the Blues game, I was saying, well, where is this clinical edge? This tour has been characterised by mistakes by New Zealand teams continually, whether that be in the second test or Ardie Surveyor dropping the ball for what I could see was a certain try.
Ardie Surveyor, Julian Surveyor.
Julian Surveyor, thank you.
Julian Surveyor in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, that first quarter.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that, JB, to be honest. It's really hard to argue. And I mean, I think... Like I think if you listen back to the predictions before with last week's podcast, I think kind of you'd be hard pressed to say Phil and I weren't wrong in the sense that New Zealand will apply massive pressure, they will play all the rugby, they'll create chances. They just, as you say, they kind of bottled it. The top 2 inches weren't there. That said, you have to do what we've done all tour and massively credit Andy Farrell and the defensive performance, because it was brutal, absolutely brutal.
It was, and isn't it funny that the one time that the All Blacks beat the Lions, they did not play like the All Blacks at all.
They played that one out rugby.
Yeah, and we never saw it again.
Gatlin ball.
It was. It's been a really bizarre test. I will say this though, I think the Lions have done New Zealand a huge favour, because New Zealand have been forced to blood some players, and yes, we did draw with them. You know, we did cobble together a team which drew with what some people consider not just the best rugby team of all time, but one of the best sports teams of all time.
Oh, statistically, there's a huge argument to say they are the best international sports team of all time.
Yeah, which is quite something. But I think they're going to kick on and become even greater now, because they've got the likes of Jordy Barrett, they've got Lau Mapu, they've got these lads who they didn't intend to blood, and their hand was forced, and they're probably in a stronger position now than they were at the start of the series.
And they've been tested in a way that they've not been tested before.
Yeah.
Because no individual nation would be able to put a defensive effort that the Lions have put in that period.
Maybe England, maybe Ireland, but not for three tests.
Yeah, oh, no
maybe
chance.
Maybe on a one-off.
Yeah.
God help South Africa, and God help Australia.
Australia, and Argentina.
Yeah.
That was that drawn series was easily, and I would argue almost not infinitely. Obviously, that's statistically ridiculous thing to say, but you know what I mean when I say it as a figure of speech. That was an infinitely more successful tour than the Australia one.
Yes, because the caliber of the team that you're playing is so much better.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you say that the All Blacks victory felt hollow. In a way, so did the Australia one, because they just weren't very good. I mean, that's what we learned from Australia. And I will say this, there was something kind of romantic about two of the greatest players of a generation sharing that trophy. It just, the pictures just looked right.
Yeah. Did you see that?
The pictures are ones that will look amazing in years to come. And even the next day, even on Saturday morning when we watched it, yesterday morning, it just looked fantastic. And I remember thinking, that's kind of going to be an iconic shot.
Yeah, the dual team shot where there's 30, 40 blokes all kind of alternated chatting to the bloke next to them.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Who's in the opposite coloured shirt.
I've got to say, brilliant. As the tour has gone on, I have fallen deeper and deeper in love with Kieran Reid.
Oh, my God, yeah.
What a guy. And I'm pretty certain now, I'm pretty certain I know what's going on. I know what's going on with both him and Sam Warburton, which is both the coaches get up to such shenanigans, they pick a captain of such probity, they can basically get away with whatever they want in the meantime, whether it be Gatland with his nose or Steve Hansen continually putting his boot into anyone he feels like.
Yeah.
But my favourite part of the test was where Kieran Reid was certain that he had a penalty.
Yeah.
He turns around, he taps Sam Warburton on the arse, and he says something nice and sporty, like, hey, it's sport, mate, you know.
This is rugby,
whatever it was. And the ref goes, it's a scrum. No, mate. sir.
Do you see just... So in the lead up to that, so Romain Poit was away...
I'm going to suggest we park this for the time being, because we could go down a rabbit hole, and let's talk about all the brilliant stuff.
Well, it was... Without getting into the detail of the actual decision,
okay.
Romain Poit was just on the sideline talking to the TMO, and both the captains were miles away, and Sam Warburton sidles up to Romain Poit, and then you see Kieran Reid like ambling into shot, and the way that Kieran Reid, he slowly starts to have a conversation with Sam Warburton, then as Romain Poit turns, Kieran Reid turns and like blocks Sam Warburton out. He like guides him out of the way. It's like the best bouncer, like casually, or the best bodyguard casually turning someone away. Brilliant.
Do you know what struck me about that shot of those two men together? How similar that they're built.
I was actually, so I thought Kieran Reid was quite a bit bigger than Sam Warburton.
Yeah, I did as well.
They're both very similarly proportioned.
Like very athletic 400 meter runners or something.
Oh, very, very heavy set 400 meter runners.
Exactly, yeah. But they've got this kind of
decathletes.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're both extremely athletic. But you know, I'm not telling you anything you couldn't find out yourself there, I guess.
So Tim, best moments then? You said let's talk about some of the positive best moments of that test.
Oh my word! There was an amazing hit put in by Johnny Sexton on
Kano.
On Kano, yeah.
That, yeah. Oh yes, yeah, yes.
That. I mean, that just kind of epitomised that you had this, you know, 12 stone wet.
wet through, not wet.
Fly,
Tim.
Wet through, yeah. 12 stone wet through, fly half, just putting himself about and smashing Kano. And also, oh, Savea, the way he ran over the top of Liam Williams.
Liam Williams.
It was a beautiful moment.
I can't believe Williams just bounced straight up after that and,
yeah,
and got back into position.
I think my favourite bit of skill from the game must have been Anton Lennart Brown's pass for the try. I thought that was glorious.
Have you after the offload from Laumapi,
yeah,
straight to Lennart Brown, and then that pass.
Oh, he just whips it, and it's not the hardest pass in the world, but it has to be pretty spot on, and he's got like a line in front of him and a line behind him. It was a nice bit of skill. That's what I'd say.
Barrett did not have to break stride as well.
Yeah,
it was the perfect. So he was going full tilt, perfectly into the bread basket, and he could just glide in.
Are we in danger, right, of because it's such a huge game, saying, "Oh, it was glorious"? Because let's just for a second, we spoke about our favourite bits of the game. Which thing will characterise it as some of the biggest errors of the game? Because there's quite a few to choose from.
So his kicking was magnificent. His kicking off the tee was magnificent, but Owen Farrell did not have a great game.
No, he didn't, did he?
He threw a few loose passes. He missed
the interception.
Yeah, the interception when it was try time.
Yeah.
If it's not a missed pass, if you just go hands or someone crashes it through, it's try. You're 5 meters and you've worked for 40-50 meters. So there was that. There was the kick when the ball kind of bounced up to him and he tried a kick through the middle of the ruck. And kick fresh air,
yep,
early in the first half, and just a number of the tap and go.
When that was the one I was thinking of.
The penalty kick, the tap and go, and he passes it like behind Watson
because the idea there is phenomenal.
Yeah,
I thought it was a great decision.
When was the last time you saw anyone catch New Zealand napping?
No, hardly ever.
Yeah,
and but just they couldn't execute the basics.
And that is Farrell.
Sorry, go on, Phil.
I'm just going to say, Farrell is a magnificent player. He did not have a good game, but his kicking has actually led to the draw, so I don't want to go too hard on him.
And conversely, Bowden Barrett, majestic out of hand quite often.
Yeah.
And with his crossfield kicks and stuff. But
yeah.
If New Zealand had a goal kicker, they'd have won 3-0.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct.
You've got to assume, haven't you, he just doesn't practice. I'm serious. He mustn't. Because everything he does is so perfect. His running's perfect. His distribution's perfect. His kicking out of hand is sublime.
Yeah.
And yet he can't kick a ball straight. Come on. There's something going on here.
I did think it was interesting that they didn't use Jordy Barrett to kick.
Yeah.
And I know it's his first start and it's by miles the biggest profile game he will ever have played in.
Mm.
But he kicks ahead of Bowden Barrett for the Canes.
Yeah.
And his percentages aren't that much better, but they are better. And they're certainly better than 50%, which was what Bowden Barrett got in that test.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is to this, unless... I mean, maybe he just prioritises different things to everyone else. And maybe he'll get away with it. But it's hard to say he's going to be one of the all-time great tens, which I think he could be, if he can't kick sticks. Because you're going to have to... get someone else to carry him.
Yeah, if you're going to compare him to Carter and Wilkinson,
yeah,
who are the two greats, and they are phenomenal kickers.
Do you know who we might be compared to most of all when it's all said and done?
Someone like Spencer.
Yeah,
Carlos,
exactly.
Carlos Spencer.
Carlos Spencer. Or I tell you another guy who we could be compared to who doesn't kick or never kick the sticks is Stephen Larkham.
Yeah.
So I guess you can do it, but it'd be rare.
Yes.
Well, isn't it amazing that the two best players on the field, there were lots of players that had strong games, but the two youngest guys from each team.
Yes, it is.
Jordy Barrett and Maro Itoje were just incredible.
Oh, Maro Itoje had some kind of... He had some moments where it looked like he'd eaten one of those Mario mushrooms or like grabbed a little star. Because he just went off on one.
And he just kept on popping up with the ball.
Yeah.
Like, New Zealand are attacking, and then all of a sudden Marrow is rampaging in the opposite direction.
He was quite the force of nature. Did he score higher than four this week?
No, 4.5. Nice. From the New Zealand Herald, yeah.
So I've been thinking, right, about this four business. Sorry to interrupt you, Tim.
No, it's all right.
This four business, right? Do you know on golf clubs, when someone hits a ball, everyone shouts four?
Yeah.
I think that should be the Mario Itoji thing, though. Every time he has a ball, everyone should shout, four!
Four! Or four is now the new 11.
Yeah.
From Spinal Tap. It goes 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and four. Then four. The highest possible score.
I actually think that's not a bad shout.
No, it's four. I like it.
Four
I
is
I
now
like
the
it.
Now the highest number, and also we should shout it every time Mario gets the ball. Four.
I like it.
Perfect.
I like it. Mario Itoji, little fact, he has still maintained the fact he has never been beaten by New Zealand at any age level.
Wow.
Did he not get beaten in the first test? Not to
No, he didn't play.
Look at that decision. That's probably
Jones.
One of the biggest takeaways from test 2 and 3 is how the hell was Mario Itoji not picked to start test 1?
Yeah, do you know what? Even though he has proven himself to be the guy to pick, I think they made the right decision in the first test, judging on past form and, you know, tour experience so far. And I also think he was on the bench to lift spirits when he came on. That's the only thing I can think of, really, because you're right, test 2 and test 3 he was outstanding.
Yeah, that is a good point, actually. Did he come on in... He must have come on in that first test.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did, yeah, and he played really... And he made a massive difference when he came on in test 1.
Hmm. Yeah, so...
The guy is every bit living up to the hype, which has been massive surrounding him. He is just an absolute superstar.
Yeah, soon to be rugby's highest paid player, allegedly.
Really?
Hmm.
That's interesting, because I would imagine second rowers are not on the list of highest paid players on average.
I also imagine that's partly to do with when they tot up sponsorship deals, of which he has some very lucrative ones.
Yes.
Adidas, for example.
Exactly. Adidas. It's either Maxi Muscle or My Protein or one of those things. They'll be cursing for me saying it's one of those.
Yeah.
One of those.
Let's put it this way. He's not going to be struggling for cash, is he?
Hemo Rage.
Hemo Rage, yeah. He's a big proponent of Hemo Rage.
Well, okay, so we know that some of the players have now achieved legendary status or well on their way, Mario Itoji being lead among them. What about Warren Gatland's role in all this?
Good question. He obviously, in my mind, he comes out of this with a lot of credit. And I was chatting to a proud Englishman last week who was cursing Gatland and saying he's got everything wrong. No. I'm saying you have got this all wrong. Gatland has done... He made an error with the Geography 6. Everyone is aware of that. But that is forgotten now. That is completely forgotten.
Yep. I mean, it could have gone so wrong for him, couldn't it? This could have been one of the worst test series in history for the Lions. It really had that kind of feel to it. Because, you know, if the All Blacks had executed better, they might have won every game by more than 15 points.
Yeah,
the Geography 6 would have been to blame. The Hurricanes game would have lived in the memory as one of the all-time epic sporting disasters.
Yeah.
You know, all these things kind of tot up. But ultimately, Warren Gatland is the highest paid coach in the world for a good... highest paid rugby coach in the world for a good reason.
Yeah.
And that's because he knows what he's doing.
He's won a test series and drawn a test series during an era in which... there were questions put over the whole viability of the Lions as a concept in the professional age.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. He's done phenomenally.
I mean, and when you look at his CV in general, he's got Heineken Cups, he's got premierships, he's got two Grand Slams, he's got a World Cup semi-final, he's got a Lions win, he's got a Lions draw. That is quite phenomenal. And yet, I have a feeling when he returns to these shores and when he takes over Wales for the Six Nations... he'll be back to same old Warren, and everyone will be back to same old criticising Warren. So it's just the nature of the beast, I think.
Well, I think actually what you saw perhaps from Warren Gatland that maybe we haven't seen quite as much of as some people would have liked in recent years is an acknowledgement of maybe doing the wrong thing and adjusting it. So the difference between the team and the performance and the style of play between test one and then the second two, the second and third test, the Johnny Sexton Owen Farrell, that was never happening. It only had, you know, it hardly happened before. It was never going to happen, and he rolled the dice and changed it. He was going to stick with Lee Halfpenny, and we were all talking, and all the smart money was that he's just going to pick Lee Halfpenny for all the tests. He did. It didn't work out. I mean, he changed it.
Tell you what.
Quite often, Warren Gatland of the past would have continued doing the same thing.
I disagree, mate. I've always said this about him. I've said it continually. He's a pragmatist. He'll play what he has, and he'll get the most out of the system, or he'll apply a system to whatever players he has in order to get the most out of him. I think that's why Wales...
He could pick any... With this squad, he could pick any system and any combinations.
Not really.
He could pick players to pick any system. But so what I'm actually paying him a compliment. I'm saying the Gatland ball style, the classic Welsh approach with the two big centres and the... And a pragmatic back three, wasn't right for this. And he changed it, and it worked.
Just leading on from that, would you not have preferred to see Lee Halfpenny this weekend?
Possibly.
Yeah, Liam Williams didn't cover himself in glory exactly.
It's because there was talk of him. Well, there was certainly questions over his fitness going into this test.
Yeah, he didn't have a great game.
No.
But it's amazing what a break two games ago can do for your career.
the break that led to one of the best tries of all time. That normally works out quite positively, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, generally speaking. So can we say the Lions concept is not dead?
Well, absolutely not. And now, after this one, the sponsorship and the funding of it is all up for grabs again. The current deal ended. And the current deal hasn't favoured the home unions, and it's been a massive... financial boost for the host nation. That is all going to change. It's a massive money spinner, and that will be reflected in the deals going forward.
Yeah, so excellent. It's going from 10 games to 8 games, isn't it?
Is that confirmed?
I think so. I think that's pretty certain. I agree with that.
I've seen... Well, the question comes down to how big a squad do you take? Because you could play 100 games if you had a 2,000 man squad.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it's not about the number of games, it's the quality of games. So, does anyone get anything out of playing the Barbarians when they land?
The Provincial Barbarians. Well, you get something. You get the first game together, and you get the plane journey out of your legs.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that if, say, every player has got one game to prove himself before it starts to get a bit more serious... If you happen to be picked for the Barbarians game, you're disorientated, you're jet-lagged, you kind of stumble off this plane, thrown into some kit, you don't know the calls, and you have a horror. It's a waste of a game. In fact, it's the opposite.
Yeah, it does more harm than good, potentially.
So I'm not against it, providing that maybe the midweek games should go, or maybe they should do something a little bit more creative. They should definitely have no midweek games between tests and then the week before a test.
Yeah, no, definitely none between the tests.
But... I think we're unanimous then. Lions can work and has to stay.
Alive and kicking. Yep. Oh, definitely.
I just want to make a couple of observations from watching the game.
Yes, please do.
One, do you not just sense a slight Scott Quinnell dance, monkey dance scenario where you can imagine him having a conversation with, you know, maybe the director in his ear, please, boss, can I do some, like, just like a hard, you know, hardcore analysis here? No. give us a hype speech now.
And do you reckon Will is standing behind him with a cattle prod? More emotion! Mean it more!
Well, on the subject of Will, did you see the interview with James Haskell after the full-time whistle?
No, I didn't.
Will Greenwood referred to him, and I believe that the actual caption when it came up with James Haskell's name also referred to him as the Archbishop of Banterbury.
Oh wow.
I think, mate, that has slightly jumped the shark now for me. And I don't think it was like Paul Ince tried to do it in football. He gave himself the nickname the Governor. No, you shouldn't be able to give yourself a nickname.
I'm for the Archbishop of Banterbury at the right time in the right place. So
how? When's the wrong time in the wrong place?
So in a professional interview on Sky is the wrong time. in James Haskell's Instagram when him and Sean O'Brien are singing Irish farmer songs. Great, happy with it. I love those Instagram videos. In a professional interview, in supposed to be a relatively formal scenario.
It was the end of a tour. It was good crack. I guess. One of my favourite bits: Kieran Reid's daughter opening her mouth to try and drink rain was beautiful.
Did not see that, mate.
He went up to Kevin Mialamu, a man who got 100 caps as well, handed Kieran Reid his 100th cap. And Kieran Reid went up to collect it and do a speech, and his two daughters and his son and his wife were up on the stage with him, and one of his youngest daughter was running around the stage opening her mouth up and drinking rain. It was outstanding.
So,
but we've credited Warren Gatland, but Steve Hansen has grown in my estimations massively through this tour as well.
Why? Because
he and Kieran Reid, the way that they dealt with Saturday, proper classy men.
I disagree. Kieran Reid,
classy men,
undoubtedly. I feel. I don't know. I don't think particularly much of Steve Hansen, truth be told. Yes, he's a good coach. Yes, he's developed this amazing All Blacks team. But you know what? So did Graham Henry. And do you know what? He keeps on adding these little jibes to people, whether it be aimed at Michael Checker, whether it be aimed at Warren Gatland. He just keeps on doing it. And it's nice to say, yeah, they were the better team on the day, or we should have done this, or that, this, that, and the other. He just continues to let himself down.
Well, I think it was after that game, it would have been very easy for Steve Hansen to have made something of refereeing decisions.
Yeah.
And I think there were a few that went against him. And when you look at the second two tests, I think you could say, you know, they definitely, there was quite a few scenarios where it could have happened. And every time a journalist tried to get him to bite, and they did lots and lots, he batted them all away.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
to me, that's
good.
Just good media training. But yeah, I guess there is a point there. I think the bigger discussion point is, shall we talk about that refereeing decision?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, before we get to that one, what did you think of the yellow card?
Mixed. It's one of those ones I don't want to be a yellow card, but it is a yellow card because Alan Wynne-Jones has been separated from his consciousness. So it's hard to argue, really. Do you know what came to mind, Tim? Came to mind was the incident in the Premiership with, I think, Jeff Parlin being knocked out, and it was maybe Longbottom, maybe it was Barrington. And it was a completely legal tackle, but because of the way Parlin fell, he got knocked out severely and Barrington got a red. So it kind of felt like that to me. It's a double tackle. The arm came up. Someone has been hit in the head with force, is knocked out. I could honestly see it being a red. I'd like it to be just a penalty, but I could see it being a red. Tim?
I disagree. And our friend of the pod, Jacques Berger, I thought he had a really good point, which is, and with that, this phrase, duty of care, if you run with your back horizontal to the ground and at waist height, it's your own duty, then what do you expect?
Yeah.
So it's kind of, as a player, if you take the decision to dip and put your head at waist height when you run into contact, you may well get an arm. That's just playing rugby. Yeah. That's called rugby. Get on with it. Let the boys play.
And I guess we know what a malicious swinging arm looks like, don't we? And I don't think that qualifies as it. So I'd be happy for someone to say rugby incident, but I can equally see why it was yellow.
Yeah, I'm probably in similar boat to you, Jay. I wasn't calling for it to be a yellow. It was careless, but you probably make a good point, Tim, that Wynne-Jones carrying the ball at that height is also arguably a little bit careless. But with all that said, I'm okay with a yellow card because I can see the consistency in the lawmaking.
I get that. Now, an interesting point off the back of that is there's something which has just been bubbling away under the surface, but I think we will hear about more this week. Alan Wynne-Jones looked in a really bad way at the time of the contact, his eyes shut.
Yep.
And much like the George North scenario, he looked in a bad way. And he didn't appear to be able to see properly when he was walking off the field. He kept, like, twitching his eyes and, he, like, screwing up his eyes like he wasn't actually able to see properly. He was back on the field soon afterwards when Courtney Laws went down. It's not a good look.
Yeah, I wasn't particularly happy with that. Because there is... So, I was listening to the Lions team doctor just last week, and he was talking about the protocols, and there are scenarios if someone is knocked unconscious...
You override it, don't you?
You don't even go through the HIA protocol. So,
which there is some suggestion that that didn't happen. Warren Gatland has come out and said he passed the HIA.
Yeah.
But apparently there's some controversy around they were still doing tests or something some 16, 20 minutes afterwards when actually you only have 10 minutes to do it in. So there's some protocol failings possibly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was just a bad look.
Do you know what one of the worst protocol failings is for this? It's the various distances of the medical room from the pitch side, which sounds like a completely inane thing to say. But it puts tremendous pressure on the medical staff if you work for someone like, for instance, Leicester Tigers, where you've got to leave the stadium and go somewhere else to do the HIA. You've got 15 minutes to do it. Whereas Sale Sharks, for instance, can literally just pull their players off, and you've been to the medical room there.
Well, easy. Bloody hell, that's not going to help anyone when you've had a head injury.
What I'm saying is, just because of the length of time to get the player there and back, they will rush the HIA. They don't have enough time to actually administer it.
I get that. I was clocked. You accidentally gave a bit of an innuendo.
Right.
And trust me to have spotted.
Absolutely. The innuendo dial was fully switched on.
So anyway, I think we'll hear something about that. But players are always going to push themselves, especially guys like Alan Wynne-Jones are always going to put themselves back in the fray if they have a sniff and a chance. And that's why the protocols are brought in to take that decision out of their hands.
I know everyone thinks I'm an arsehole for saying this. I just can't help but think that if you asked Alan Wynne-Jones when he had full grasp of all his senses, do you want to go back on? He would have gone back on. I don't like this idea that you just take it. I mean, sometimes I get it, like, you know, I don't want a player ruining his health and his career to get through an LV Cup game, but it's the Lions, and I know you shouldn't think like this, and there's no such thing as a mild concussion, yada yada yada, but what would he think 20 years down the line?
It depends if he can still think 20 years down the line.
I don't know any of these guys that can't think 20 years down the line, and that could kind of be my point. So yeah,
well, yeah, it's interesting. Someone's got a Hippocratic oath. And if there's anything to answer for. But anyway, it's not even necessarily a thing, but it's something that's bubbling under the surface. It'd be interesting to see if anything plays out. But anyway.
Let's talk about the referee's decision. Come on, let's get it done.
Okay, so the final decision was scrummage to New Zealand for accidental offside. kickoff had been taken. Now, I would just say, if I was a New Zealander, if this had been the other way around, this podcast would be it would be ridiculous. People would be getting annoyed with how much we had gone on about how outrageous the decision was.
Yeah. I think that's probably fair to say.
This has so many crossovers, isn't it, with Craig Joubert and his decision, Scotland-Australia.
Yeah.
And the problem with this decision is, it's clearly wrong. It's wrong, not necessarily according to the law, but it's wrong according to how the law has been applied in the past and the precedents already set. So we know what this offence looks like, we know what the sanction is, yet there is a way for this referee to get out of it, and that's exactly what he's done, because he has applied the right law. He's applied the...
That's,
he can interpret the
rest. No, he hasn't.
Yeah, that's the bit that I'm confused about, because there is a way that he can get out of this. I'm not sure, having watched it back several times, exactly how he has articulated his thinking to get from where he was to where he is now. And there are ways you can do that, but I'm not sure Romain Poit set out to Kieran Reid, or anyone else indeed, how he got from where he was to where he is.
It appears that he bottled making a big decision.
Yes. That's how it looks. Definitely how it looks.
So, just give me a second, please. I'll just bring up the two laws.
Yeah, I've got them in front.
Oh, yes, please. Can you read them then?
So, there's two laws. There's 11.6 and 11.7. So, 11.6 okay. is accidental offside. So, 11.6A, when an offside player cannot avoid being touched by the ball or by a teammate carrying it, the player is accidentally offside. If the player's team gains no advantage from this, play continues. If the player's team gains an advantage, a scrum is formed with the opposing team throwing the ball in.
Yeah. So
11.6B. When a player hands the ball to a teammate in front of the first player, the receiver is offside. Unless the receiver is considered to be intentionally offside, in which case a penalty kick is awarded, the receiver is accidentally offside and a scrum is formed with the opposing team throwing the ball in.
Yeah. So
the problem with that is
yeah.
that's 11.6. 11.7, offside after a knock on. When a player
which is what this was.
When a player knocks on and an offside teammate next plays the ball, the offside player is liable to sanction if playing the ball prevented an opponent from gaining an advantage, sanction, penalty kick.
Was it a knock on?
That's the bit that I think Joubert had an out on. Now, Poit. So I've watched this over and over again. It, at first glance, it looks 100% like a knock-on. But Liam Williams falls a yard back from where he first touches it. And if you look at the 22 line, I think it is, it's not a clear and obvious knock-on. It is at I want to say at best, it is flat.
Yeah. So
that is the way, if he wanted to get out, he could have used it.
If it's flat, it's not accidental either, is it?
Well, no, because...
It's not offside.
Yeah, well, no. It's not a knock-on. So if it's not a knock-on, 11.6 applies, in which case the maximum sanction is a scrum.
Hang on, if it's not a knock-on...
No, if it's a flat pass, then it doesn't matter where the player catches it.
It's completely irrelevant, isn't it?
Just play on.
But he's in an offside position.
Well, then that doesn't matter.
Hang on. Just let me get this right. You cannot be in an offside position, can you, if you're catching a flat ball or a backwards pass?
No, you can't.
You see what I mean? You can come back from an offside position, but to actually receive that ball, you can't be offside.
That's a good point.
Correct. Now, here, Ken Owens's actions... Are an interesting, because Ken Owens thought he was offside.
Yes, Ken Owens.
Because he caught the ball and then as quick as he caught it, tried to pretend he hadn't.
Yeah, it's clearly a penalty, isn't it? I mean, unless he's got it wrong in both ways, it's either a penalty because Ken Owens is offside, or if he's not offside, then it's just play on.
Yeah. Well, now this is interesting. No, whichever way you look at it, and again, I'm not. I think that there was the issue I have mostly is that every way you look at it, and I think this is what we're all kind of in agreement on, whichever way you look at it, Romain Poit has had an absolute shocker, because firstly, he didn't play advantage, and Anton Linnett-Brown was through with the fullback to beat.
Wasn't that Fekitoa?
Two men on his shoulder. Fekitoa, was it?
I thought it was Linnett-Brown.
Okay.
Anyone.
He had two men on his shoulder, Fekitoa and Perenara. And he had one man to beat.
Yeah.
And the referee blew for a penalty.
That's exactly what I said at the time. No advantage, let Fekitoa or whoever it is come back for the scrum, please. What?
So
that's awful for starters.
Just so a definition of offside, just to clarify this point. So at the start of the game, all players are onside. As the match progresses, players may find themselves in an offside position. Such players are then liable to be penalised until they become onside.
Mm-hmm.
In general play, a player is offside if the player is in front of a teammate who is carrying the ball or in front of a teammate who last played the ball.
In front of a teammate who, like a kicker.
Liam Williams was up in the air, he plays the ball, Ken Owens is in front of him, therefore he's offside.
Yes, but Ken Owens has got to work his way back onside before he's part of the game. So the offside doesn't apply. I mean,
no, the offside definitely applies.
I'm not sure it does.
So listen to that definition again.
Yeah, but it's
in front. A player is offside if he's in front of a teammate who last played the ball.
So
until.
Yeah, but I think that means in relation to a kick. I'm kind of with JB here. And maybe we're splitting hairs, and someone can pick us up, or someone can clarify this. But I think it kind of is irrelevant if the pass is flat or backwards.
No, it's not. It's not irrelevant, but it means that the law was correctly applied. Weirdly. So he is in an offside position. Liam Williams plays the ball.
Yep.
Ken Owens is in
offside. Onside.
He's offside until he gets behind the ball.
Yeah.
But he never gets behind the ball because he then plays the ball.
He doesn't get behind the ball, does he?
No, because he plays the ball. So it is. Okay. So it's law 11.6. Definitely. It's law 11.6. He then plays the ball, but the sanction is a scrum.
This is getting quite complicated. So that's only relevant if you say that it wasn't forwards.
Correct.
Now again, it's very very marginal whether it was forwards. It certainly looked forward, and the referee thought it was forward, called it forward, even when he explained, even when he went back to give a scrum, he was still saying forward off.
Yeah.
Off red.
And his
explanation for not applying law 11.7 was that it just hit Ken Owens.
Yeah.
Clearly, you can see Ken Owens caught the ball.
Right. Yeah. So Poit makes a big mistake there. You're quite right. And also there are acceptable uses of the TMO. So the reason he was able to use the TMO was because
it was
dangerous play, yeah. It tackle in the air, which there wasn't. So he adjudicated on that, but he shouldn't have then used the TMO to adjudicate on the offside position. He should have gone with his original call.
He's had an absolute shocker.
Agreed.
If I ever get caught throwing my other half into a wood chipper, right, and I'm prevented from doing so, I want Roman Poit to actually represent me in court. This is clearly a great legal mind. I mean, how quick do you need to be to think of the other sanction you need to review the decision you've made, and then think of enough laws in order to reverse it, in order to take the responsibility off your hands? Imagine being married to this man. Like, how difficult winning arguments would be.
What was really bizarre, though, what was particularly bizarre was that, having gone to the TMO, they ruled out him and the TMO between them, ruled out Kieran Reid. Some people would say, and Warren Gatland said, it was should have been a penalty.
No.
I disagree with that. I think let the boys play. Crack on.
Fair challenge.
Fair challenge. Just go for it. But some people would disagree, but that's not the point. He said fair challenge.
Yeah.
He'd gone to the TMO. He then said, the last thing he said before giving his decision was to George Ayoub, the TMO, "So are we agreed then, George? Sit a ball forward off of red, played by 16 red, penalty offside, TMO, yes."
Yeah, I thought...
He walked 10 metres and gave a scrum.
Do you know what?
I know.
I'm pretty sure that when he said that, it also followed with him ripping off his headset and stamping on it on the floor, or dousing it in water. Sorry, George, can't hear you. Scrum. Who are we trying to kid here? Because, yes, we know it was a penalty. We all can kind of work out it was a penalty. But it wouldn't have changed the game anyway, because Kieran Reid would have called for a scrum, because his fly-off's Bowden Barrett. So we're all talking around in circles, and that's absolutely fine. It's nice to speculate, but he would have called for the scrum anyway.
So Poit was just saving Bowden Barrett's blushes.
Exactly right.
Oh, that's so nice of him, actually. I hadn't thought of that. Roman recognises he is the greatest player on earth, and he didn't want his reputation to be tarnished.
Exactly.
There is some suggestion. The New Zealand media, as you can imagine, they're very interested in this, and apparently the last thing you can hear Roman Poit say before he gives his decision is "we, Jerome." So there's talk that the assistant referee Jerome Garces was in his ear saying something.
Sneaky Jerome Garces.
So we didn't have Scotland, but we had France.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that.
Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There we go. Excellent. Right, well, that's the Lions covered off then. Anyone got anything else to add about the Lions?
I have got a little Lions quiz that I've prepared.
Yes, please, Phil.
Yes, Phil. Oh, just before we do that then, quickly. So we had over 1,000 people just vote in a little poll, and they made player of the series John Fox Davis with 46% of the vote.
Yep.
Just ahead of Maro Itoje, player of the series, with 37%. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Very, very happy. Fox Davis.
By the way, haven't the Welsh got an amazing record of player of the season?
Friend of the pod, Bryn Williams, tweeted that. I was pretty amazed with that. So it's been a Welshman player of the series for the past five, is it?
Yeah, yeah. 20 years. Gibbs, Quinnell,
Ryan. Quinnell was never player of the series, was he?
That's what we got tweeted. Gibbs, Quinnell, Ryan Jones, Jamie Roberts, Lee Halfpenny, Fox Davis.
So yeah, Foxpenny. Who's Foxpenny?
well, before we start calling him Fox Davis anymore, I have got a suggestion that we call him JD2. I think now we should call him JD. From now on the podcast, no more JD2. Jonathan Davies is JD, and Jonathan Davies can be Jiffy or Jonathan Davies now. But Jonathan Davies, the Scarlet Centre, who's been amazing in the last two Lions series, he is now. We are calling him JD from now on.
The original and best.
Well done, yep. Well done, JD. The biggest accolade we could possibly give you. Right, come on then, Phil. Let's get this Lions quiz done. Let's see who really is the Lion King around here.
Okay, have you got pen and paper at the ready?
Oh, close enough.
JB, yep. I can adjudicate on you. Tim, I trust you.
Why? Why is it Tim that you trust?
Well,
I would be watching Tim like a hawk now.
Right. First question.
Go for it.
Who was the first Lions replacement to be called up?
Okay.
So the player who was called up first.
Got it.
Second question. Who scored the Lions' second try on tour?
Okay.
Who received the Lions' first yellow card on tour?
Ooh.
Okay.
First or second, did you say? Second try, first yellow card.
Second try, first yellow card. They were both in the same game. I'll give you that clue.
Okay.
Question four. Which member of the Lions touring party received an OBE for services to rugby in the Queen's birthday honours?
Okay.
Mm. Okay.
Far away.
Next question. In an interview after his two-try performance against the Chiefs, what did Jack Noel tell Sky Sports his nickname was back home?
No idea.
He said, back in Exeter, they call me something.
Was it a slur?
It wasn't a slur. Think... It's not like this. Well, it's not close to this, but imagine what Sam James would say if he said, back home they call me.
Ah.
So it's not the same as that, but it's that kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah, I remember him saying something though.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Three players from the starting lineup for the first test play for teams who did not make the knockout stages of the Avicii or the Pro 12?
The knockout stages?
So the semi-final or final. So three players from the starting lineup, they play for teams who did not make the knockout stages of the Avicii or Pro 12 this
starters.
Season.
Definitely starters.
Starters.
Sorry, say again.
Three players from the starting lineup for the first test play for teams, and the teams did not make the knockout stages of the Avicii or the Pro 12 this season. Which players were they?
Good question.
Okay, I've got two. Okay, yeah, I think I've got the only three.
Three, only three.
Right, okay. All right.
Happy, Jay?
Yeah, very happy. Nailed it.
Okay. Which two of the Geography 6 actually got onto the pitch? Actually got some game time?
Every time I see a Geography 6, I want to play that music from the Magnificent Seven.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
I think it's question 8. Where in the world did 2013 Lion Alex Cuthbert watch the second test?
Oh, no idea.
So, I want to know what city in the world he was in.
Somewhere exotic, I'm guessing. Newport.
And there is a story behind it as well.
Okay.
Don't know. No idea.
Probably that Gatland had said, be close by.
Okay, question 9. Three questions to go. Which Kiwi played the Lions 4 times on tour?
Okay.
Question 10. After test 2, what analogy did the All Black players use to say they were putting the last game behind them?
I know.
I'm going to do terribly at this.
And final question. Question 11. After test 3, what simile did the All Blacks use to describe the draw?
Yeah, got that one.
Oh dear.
That's okay. Someone texting JB the answer.
Yeah. Right, Jay, can I see your answers?
Yeah, I don't have one for Cuthbert, but everything else is there.
Okay, Tim, I'm going to ask you to answer first, please.
Yeah.
So, first question, who's the first Lions replacement to be called up?
James Haskell.
JB?
James Haskell.
Incorrect.
Who was it?
Greg
Laidlaw.
Laidlaw.
Bloody hell.
Was that before Billy Vunipola got injured?
It was, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
rubbish.
It was Young's stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, it was after the last game of the season for Leicester, for everyone else.
Yeah.
Number 2, who scored the Lions' second try on tour?
Was it Tim?
Tim?
I guessed Anthony Watson.
Anthony Watson got the first try on tour.
Was it Alan Wynne-Jones?
It was CJ Stander.
Oh, I knew it was a forward.
Damn it.
And question 3, in the same game, who received the first yellow card? Tim?
Ian Henderson?
Liam Williams.
Liam Williams is...
It's just a standard belt. There you are.
Correct. 1 to JB, 0 to Tim. Question 4. Who received an OBE? Tim?
Rory Best.
Oh, wow.
JB?
I believe Tim might have got this. I went with Neil Jenkins.
Neil Jenkins. I don't have a... incorrect. Thanks, Jay. Rory Best.
One all.
Jack Noel's nickname. Tim, have you got anything?
I just guessed Captain Jack, but I don't know.
That's good. It's a good guess.
The King.
So he called himself in the interview. He said, yeah, back in Exeter, they call me the Pick and Go King.
Oh, I remember.
Oh, what?
To which a load of, I think it was, what's his name? The scrum half, Hayden Thomas. It was him and maybe a few other Exeter players were watching it in the Exeter clubhouse, and they all Instagrammed a video of them like booing him when he said that.
Just so you know, my little ding time. Gareth Steenson on the Rugby Dungeon this week.
There ding. You
go. Ding.
Exeter Chief.
Ask him about his bar.
Oh, I will do.
Right. Number six. The three players from the starting lineup who play for teams that did not make the knockout stage of the Avicii or the Pro 12.
Okay, well, the teams I thought were Ulster and Gloucester. So Greg Laidlaw, Ian Henderson, Rory Best.
Sorry, this is from the first test.
This is from the first test.
So I was thinking of... God. I've completely ballsed up then.
Tio Falatau.
Oh, hold on. Give me a second. That must be...
No.
Tio Falatau Watson. You can't do it now. I've made it irrelevant.
3 points for JB.
Falatau.
3 points for JB.
Wow.
Utter implosion. Well, I just didn't... Oh, man. I was thinking about the bloody other questions.
It's okay, Tim. It's okay.
JB all over now. Streaks into a 4-1 lead. Okay, Tim. Next question. Which two of the Geography 6 actually got some game time?
Dell and the Christian, whatever his face is, the hooker.
It was Dell.
Yeah.
But I don't have him down. I've got Davis and Russell.
So you both get 1 point. It was
Russell.
Dell and Russell. Yeah. 1 point each. So yeah. 5-2. Number eight. Where in the world did Alex Cuthbert watch the second test?
Newport.
I'll say he stayed in Samoa.
You'll like this.
Oh, go on then.
The Cardiff Blues, it seems like quite a few of their team, travelled out to watch USA play Canada in the Rugby World Cup.
Is that right?
So, and the game was played in San Diego.
For what reason did they do that? Just for a laugh?
Cam Dolan.
Oh, wow.
To go and watch their mate, Cam Dolan.
That is cool.
Beat Canada and qualify for the World Cup.
And I guess they're all on holiday, aren't they? Because they all did Welsh duty.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So, quite a cool rugby story.
Cam Dolan's not like a guy that I should interview. Yes. Good. you must be relatively popular.
Yeah. I think he definitely is in America. Huh. And obviously in Cardiff as well.
With his teammates.
Yeah. Okay, number nine. Which Kiwi played the Lions 4 times on tour? Tim?
Laumapi.
Rico Ioane.
Rico Ioane.
Is that how you say it?
Well, either or. JB Ioane streaks into a 6-2 lead.
Right.
Whatever. I've definitely got the next one.
Unassailable lead. Okay, after test two, what analogy did the All Blacks players use to say they were putting the game behind them?
I don't know this, so I've guessed.
I didn't know that one.
I'm going to say they described it as putting... That's tape in the bin.
Like sweeping the changing rooms or
I'd never heard this phrase. I don't know if you have. They said we're gonna flush the toilet, so to speak.
No, I haven't. I have heard the phrase, obviously.
It was an interview with Cody Taylor. He said, yeah, we're in camp, we're all gonna flush the toilet, so to speak.
I wonder if it's like one of those ritualistic things, you know, like when New England lost and they buried the football in the middle of it. They all lined up and flushed it individually. Symbolic.
That's it. No, they all wrote down like the mistake they made on a bit of loo roll.
Yeah.
And then one by one put their bit of loo roll in the toilet, and then Steve Hansen flushed it.
I know.
It was gone.
I actually like the idea of them writing it on a bit of tape and putting it in the bin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just taping the bin, bro.
Final question. After test three, what simile did the All Blacks use to describe the draw?
Sorry, go on, JB. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, like, kissing your sister because of...
Yeah, that is what they said.
Yeah, like kissing your sister.
Yeah.
Which I don't get, because kissing your sister and drawing a match, like, at least you get something out of it, a drawn series. It's like, I don't understand the simile at all.
It's a New Zealand phrase, Tim, so they obviously get something out of it.
Yeah, there's crazy New Zealanders, eh? Oh, well.
Like, I wouldn't be disgusted.
Let's face it, there's no one else to kiss up there.
Yeah. They were, yeah. Well, yeah. Good quiz, Phil. I did terribly in it, but a good quiz. JB,
well done.
Ah, oh, thanks, mate.
6-3 the victor.
Yep. There we go. That's it, isn't it? That is actually the whole podcast done.
So we've got no games next week.
We've got no games next week, but we do have other things to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
We've got the Premiership fixtures. We've got an amazing, and I do mean amazing, write-up of the Leicester Tigers in our... What are we going to call it? Fan free agency, or... I can't think of a better word for it, but...
We'll think of a name for it, and Ulster, we've had a pride Ulsterman getting in touch with some thoughts as well.
Yeah, so we could actually do one Pro 12 and one Premiership team every week, and we might do that midweek this week.
And confirmation, we're going to get to call it the Avicii still.
Yes. Excellent. Yeah.
Which is tremendous news, because changing my soundboard would be a nightmare.
Rewiring it for another DJ.
Exactly.
Just one last thing while we're on, or while we're wrapping up. You mentioned before about Kieran Reid having his kids on at the end of when he was picking up his 100th cap. His 100th cap. And I was watching it with friend of the pod, CJ, in Edinburgh again, 2 weeks on the bounce. And Claire, my wife, was kind of not really paying attention, even though it's the biggest game.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this already. Whenever you hear the word Claire, she coined the phrase Avicii.
She did.
Yeah, she's a trailblazer in rugby podcasting.
Well, she was kind of texting away, playing on her phone, and then looked up. The game was over, and Kieran Reid was on there with his kid, with his son in his arms. And she said, oh, who's that? Why is there a baby on the screen? So I was, well, that is the current All Black captain and someone who will undoubtedly be the future All Black captain. Kieran Reid's son.
Well, if the Barretts are to go by anything, not only will he be the captain, but probably one of the best players of all time.
Of all time, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Exactly that.
Right, so I think that's pretty much it. So you can find us on... well, if you're a child, find us on Instagram. Where's that, Tim?
Egg Chasers Podcast, JB.
If you're a nauseatingly boring middle-aged person who likes to hammer out arguments in 120 characters or less...
141 characters or less.
Thank you. Follow us on Twitter. Or if you're just one of the masses, you can follow us on Facebook. Or, like normal people, just download us on iTunes or on the Acast app. Is that broadly right, Tim?
It is. It's broadly very right. We've got some outstanding for the next pod. We've got some outstanding tour stories and stuff, which I'd love to get into. But yeah, no, that's the Lions' third test done.
And what a test!
What a shame!
What an empty, hollow feeling. 6 weeks with no rugby.
Well, let's leave you with this. Because now we can look forward to next season's domestic rugby, and we'll be back with you later on in the week. Let the boys play, gents.
Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.